This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The Senate loses or stands to lose another Republican. Mike Huckabee gets noticed and gets more support in Iowa. And two celebrities endorse their favorite candidates. It's Wednesday and time again for the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR's political editor Ken Rudin joins us on the docket this week. The growing list of Republicans who will not be seeking re-election in the House and the Senate. The CNN YouTube debate in St. Petersburg, Florida tonight. Will Governor Mike Huckabee's surge continue? Endorsements from Oprah and Babs beg the question, does celebrity support hurt or help candidates? We'll have a trivia question for you. And if you want to talk about how the retirement of a congressman or senator affects politics where you live, give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us. talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blog of the nation. Later in the program, we'll hear about a forgotten hostage crisis now almost 5 years old. But first, the political junkie, Ken Rudin, joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
Senator Trent Lott announced this week he will resign from the Senate before the Senate term ends this year, before Christmas.
Big shock. Of course, he was rumored to be pondering retirement in 2006, but he wanted to hang around because of helping the Katrina relief. And so this came from out of nowhere. And obviously, this is the latest bit of weird news for the Republican Party. Trent Lott, of course, the seat is not up this year, next year. He was reelected last year, but there are 23 out of the 35 Senate seats. 23 of them are now being held by Republicans, and it's another tough hurdle for them to, if they're going to pick up seats in November.
And there are a lot of speculation about why he may have decided to bail out of the United States Senate 5 years early.
Well, he said he wants to spend more time with his family. If I hear that line once more in Washington, I think I wish I had a dime. Or actually, I wish I had $1 million every time I heard it, because even if I only heard it once, it would still be $1 million.
Yeah.
But he says, one of the speculation is there are new lobbying requirements that go into effect next year. And if he leaves the Senate this year, he will be able to make an X amount of money, cash in, so to speak, quicker than he would. But of course, it puts the Democrats and Republicans in this big fight in Mississippi over when to have the special election. Haley Barbour, the Republican governor, says that what happens is that he'll name an appointment, a replacement.
Interim senator, yeah.
Right, and then who will seek re-election in November of 2008. Democrats say not so fast. Some state law, one interpretation of the state law says that within 90 days of an appointment or the resignation of a senator, they'll have a special election. Of course, Democrats would rather have that happen than an appointee have a year of seniority. So they would like to have it sooner than later, the special election.
But Mississippi is generally regarded as a very red state. I mean, it's solid Republican.
Solid Republican. President Bush won the state by 20 points. Haley Barbour was reelected overwhelmingly last month. No Democrat has been elected to the Senate from Mississippi since John Stennis in the, 1982, who, if memory serves, he beat Haley Barbour. So it's been, once upon a time, a solidly Democratic state, and now solidly in the Republican corner.
One other retirement we should note, Indiana Representative Julia Carson, a Democrat, says she is likely to resign as well. This, of course, not due to, anything but illness.
Right. She's suffering from terminal cancer, and she'd been sick for some time now, and she made it official over the weekend that she would not seek another term.
Let's go now to talk more about retirements in the House of Representatives and the United States Senate. And joining us is Jennifer Duffy, senior editor of the Cook Political Report, on the line with us from her office here in Washington. And nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation, Julia.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
And besides Trent Lott in the Senate, there are several Republicans who have elected not to, go for election.
Well, that's right. Now Republicans are looking at essentially six seats unless and until Governor Barbour appoints somebody. You've had Senator Domenici of New Mexico retire for health reasons. You've had Senator Allard of Colorado decide to keep his pledge to serve only two terms. John Warner of Virginia has had enough. Everybody's had their reasons for leaving, but I think that the big commonality here is that it's just not that much fun being in the minority.
And perhaps not Trent Lotch, for sure, not in 2008, but a lot of those senators thought they would not have much fun in their next election campaign.
Well, that's true. You know, I think, though, that somebody like John Warner, like Pete Domenici, probably, and Senator Hagel from Nebraska, who's also retiring, probably would not have had very competitive races. I mean, but their retirements hand Democrats an opportunity.
And at this point, I think Harry Reid, the Democratic leader in the United States Senate, said he expects if the election were held today, he might pick up 4 additional seats.
Yeah, at this point, you know, with races just in their infancy, you know, my range for Democratic pickups is 3 seats to 6 seats.
And then let's go to the House of Representatives, where the picture is, well, it's always a little more complicated because there's so many more of them. But in places like Ohio, it seems like it's a plague has hit Republicans.
That's right. And I mean, you know, these Republicans did some awfully tough battle in 2006 to hold on to these seats. The thing that you need to remember, though, about House seats is they are not all created equal. And, you know, some of those Ohio seats are going to be very competitive and others not so competitive. But what really is interesting here is the numbers. 17 Republicans in the House have said they will retire. Just 5 on the Democratic side with Julia Carson's announcement. Now, since not all seats are created equal, of these 17 seats, we only count 8 of them as truly, truly vulnerable. But those are 8 challenges that Republicans don't need right now.
And then you combine this with the fundraising differential. Democrats on the congressional level, on the senatorial level, have been vastly out. They've been taking a lot more money than the Republicans. And this begins to look like, even if you have a fairly easy campaign in a place like Mississippi, for example, you're going to be spending resources you're going to need elsewhere.
Well, that's true. I think Republicans, and especially in the House, where the fundraising differential between the parties is staggering. I have never seen it like this. You know, they're in a tough position. They're not going to be able to help their challengers much, and they're not going to be able to help their own incumbents much. On the Senate side, I think that the incumbents know that they're going to have to raise money on their own and sort of do this without much help from the senatorial committee, and they're doing that. Challengers are going to get less help. They're going to have to make some tough decisions. Now, there are certainly a few things that need to happen in Mississippi before we know what kind of race we're faced with, but I'm not sure that it's a place that money is going to be a major factor.
Jennifer, it's Ken Rudin here. On the Democratic side in the Senate, the two Democrats everybody seems to be talking about as potentially vulnerable are Mary Landrieu in Louisiana and Tim Johnson in South Dakota. What are those races looking like now?
Well, I think that, you know, Landrieu by far is the more vulnerable of the two, and not all her vulnerability is related to anything that she's done. Obviously, the electorate in Louisiana has changed a great deal. In fact, in 2006, it was the only state in the country that actually trended towards Republicans. And we saw in the governor's race in October that a Republican was elected, and fairly easily. In fact, Democrats had a hard time coming up with a candidate. So the state has changed a great deal. Now, Landrieu won the 2 Senate races she's fought against, frankly, fairly mediocre Republican challengers by 50,000 votes or less. So really the question for Landrieu is, are those 60,000 votes or 50,000 votes still there in New Orleans for her?
We're talking about because of Katrina.
Because of Katrina and the population that has left the state.
Right.
Exactly.
And she may not be so fortunate in her opposition this time around.
That is true. Her likely opponent is the state treasurer. His name is John Kennedy, not a bad name in politics. And until August, he was actually a Democrat, and he switched parties. He has not yet announced, but he is certainly expected to run, probably unopposed in the primary. And he will make a strong candidate in his reelection campaign. He did some extensive statewide advertising to build up his name idea a little bit. It's going to be a good race.
What's happening with Tim Johnson?
That's a very good question. I mean, as you know, Senator Johnson's been recovering from pretty extensive brain surgery he had almost a year ago, and he's had to learn how to speak again and learn how to walk again. He says he's running for reelection. Republicans have a couple of candidates out there, but I think challenging Johnson is going to be very hard. I mean, there probably won't be debates in this race, and nobody's going to question that. So, and attacking him is going to leave the opponent open to charges of insensitivity. I think the only way Johnson is truly vulnerable is if voters feel he's not up to the job.
We're talking with Jennifer Duffy, a senior editor of the Cook Political Report, 800-989-8255, if you'd like to join us. And Brian's on the line. Brian calling us from Twin Falls in Idaho.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Regarding senators leaving Congress, we have Larry Craig out here. I'm sure you guys know that and know everything about it. A few things I read, you know, I know that he was kicked off of some of the committees, and I read that a lot of his staff are leaving him, and that the staff, as far as, you know, knowing about certain issues or whatever the case may be, know more than he would about it. So, you know, how effective is he? And, you know, should it be, I mean, you know, forget about the stigma of what happened. I mean, just from an effectiveness point of view, should he leave?
Well, that's, I guess, up to a lot of people. But Jennifer Duffy, what's his situation now? He, of course, initially said he was going to be leaving last September.
That's right. And he has decided, well, first he said he would resign. And then he decided that, no, he would finish his term out. That your caller is right. His staff is moving on. You know, jobs on Capitol Hill aren't all that easy to find, so they take them where they can get them. The leadership has not restored his ranking status on committees. Is he effective? I think the office can still do the constituent service type of work, but on a larger picture, certainly his effectiveness has been much diminished.
Okay, thanks for the call, Brian.
Thank you.
And Jennifer Duffy, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Jennifer Duffy, senior editor of the Cook Political Report, with us by phone from her office here in Washington, D.C. This is a giant-sized edition of the Political Junkie. We'll do this every Wednesday till next November. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about Republican Mike Huckabee, shown to be a strong finisher, at least in public opinion polls, in Florida now, as well as Iowa. We'll also have a trivia question for you. Ken Rudin is with us. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later in the hour, the story of three American hostages held in Colombia since 2003. We'll talk with a reporter who traveled there in a few minutes. Right now, it's our regular visit with the Political Junkie. NPR political editor Ken Rudin is with us, as he is every Wednesday. If you can't get enough of him, you can find his column and his podcast online at npr.org. And a notice, next week we'll be doing this from Des Moines. We'll have a special broadcast of Talk of the Nation Monday from Des Moines. On Tuesday, the NPR Iowa Public Radio Democratic Presidential Candidates Debate. On Wednesday, I'll be back here in Washington. Ken Rudin will join us from Iowa to deconstruct all the activity of the debate and everything with less than a month to go before the Iowa caucuses. Right now, we're going to change directions a little bit and talk about Mike Huckabee, one of the presidential hopefuls on the Republican side. He's seen a big boost in poll numbers of late, hoping to cash in on that popularity. If you have questions about who he is and about the reasons behind his surge, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And again, there's also our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Ken, Mike Huckabee, just a few months ago, regarded as one of the also-rans.
Well, you know something? I mean, we talked about the fact that he doesn't have organization, he doesn't have money. But if anybody questions whether these debates are significant or make a difference, they absolutely have. When Hillary Clinton was flawless in the debate, we said, well, she's a front runner. When she stumbled a bit in the Philadelphia debate a few weeks ago, we said, uh-oh, there's something going on here, and we saw a Barack Obama surge. On the Republican side, Ron Paul really, of course, he's made a name for himself with all the support and money on the internet, but his performance in the debates, his views on the war in Iraq, that has gotten him a whole bunch of support. Same with Mike Huckabee. Again, he started off very, very slow. He did finish a second place in the Iowa straw poll last August, but again, he wasn't getting much traction, but he has this way of communicating during the debates that gotten a lot of journalists pretty excited. Whether that matters or not to Republican voters, that's one thing. But it's what we've seen in the debates have made him really come on. And so you see several polls in Iowa. They all show Mitt Romney with a lead. But again, Mike Huckabee very, very close, some within the margin of error.
Mm. To learn more about Governor Mike Huckabee, we turn to John Brumette, a reporter for the Arkansas News, and he joins us by phone from his office. Wait a minute. I forgot. Just before John joins us, we have a trivia question for
you. It's about time. I thought you'd forgot all about it. Yes, we have a trivia question. In 2000, it was George W. Bush. Before that, it was 1992, Bill Clinton. They were sitting governors elected president. Before Bush and Clinton, who was the last previous sitting governor elected president?
And send us an email, 800-989-8255. That's our phone number. And email is talk@npr.org. Well,
time for John Brumette.
Time for the talk about the former governor of Iowa, Mike Huckabee. And John Brumette joins us by phone from his office in Little Rock, Arkansas, where he writes for the Arkansas News. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And who is Mike Huckabee? He's known to most of us as the rock and roll playing former minister and man who's lost 100 pounds.
Well, that's a lot of it. He's a man who actually, before he got into the pulpit, he had a background in radio. He was, I think from the age of 13 or 14, he was an on-air personality in Hope, Arkansas, the local radio station.
And they're letting him run for president.
And right. And he's a very media-savvy guy. He's got the professionally trained voice, both from the radio booth and the pulpit. People have said to me they can't believe that a Southern Baptist preacher would be so keen on and hip to the popular culture, but he's been a media being before he was a minister. That's not to diminish his religion or the genuineness of it. It's just to define him politically. He comes from a very media savvy place. He knows a lot about what we do and how we do it, he's making a strong connection with media folks in Iowa and elsewhere around the country.
Of course, we're talking about some celebrity endorsements today, Oprah Winfrey and Barbara Streisand. He's got Chuck Norris.
And he's playing it for all he's worth. And then the wrestler.
Ric Flair.
Ric Flair, yeah.
He's that's really what led to a lot of these inquiries I've been getting about what is a Southern Baptist preacher doing with a wrestling associate. And that's just... Huckabee is a mixed character. There's a lot of different competing, seemingly contradictory elements to him.
Let's get some callers on the line. This is Jim, and Jim's with us from Cleveland in Ohio.
Hi, I just wanted to bring up a point about Mike Huckabee's conservative credentials. There's a website out there that people might check out, taxhikemike.org. You can find videos of him actually begging the state for a tax increase in order to provide tuition for illegal aliens to go to college.
And he's been attacked by a group called the Club for Growth. And Jim, I'm going to hang up because your phone is a little bit dicey. But thanks very much for the phone call. He's been attacked by a group called the Club for Growth, which is an anti-tax Republican group here based in Washington, D.C. And
which Mike Huckabee calls the Club for Greed.
Club for Greed.
Yes.
And But John Brumette, there are people who say, wait a minute, he's not your typical conservative.
Well, again, he's hard to define. He is clearly a religious conservative, a social conservative on abortion and socio-religious issues. You can't get more to the right than he is. But he is not an economic conservative. And his claims to be are belied by his record in Arkansas. I found myself supporting him in Arkansas because he was a Republican who believed in government and a role for government in a capital poor state with a lot of human needs. He believed in raising money to balance the budget. He did raise taxes frequently here, comparably to Bill Clinton's record of raising taxes when he was governor before. We raised highway taxes. When he was confronted with a school reform order from the state Supreme Court, he didn't demagogue it. He didn't fight it. He stepped up and went along with tax increases to pay for court-ordered reforms. When we got our tobacco settlement, he invested it in health and health education. The Republicans here don't like him. They tend to be to his right, and some call him a, quote, pro-life liberal, which Fred Thompson picked up the other day. He's not that, but he's certainly a pro-life economic moderate or pragmatist, clearly.
John is with us. John calling from Grants Pass in Oregon.
Listen, I'm watching from the Democrat side, but for my money, Huckabee is the only one that really stands out with a capital I integrity. I think he's got a good interest and an honest interest in the health of America, and that rings much more true than Giuliani's I'm number one 9/11 guy who didn't have the phone system working denials. So I really think Huckabee has integrity, and that's why I'm pleased to see him in the race. In case the Democrats don't make it, Huckabee would be my choice.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, John.
Thank you.
Would he have appeal across the spectrum? I mean, he's also been challenged by a lot of people for being one of the three Republican candidates who held up his hand when asked who here does not believe in the theory of evolution.
That's for me.
Yep, that's for you.
Well, I think he's going to, if he continues to be taken seriously, continues to gain, he's going to get more defined and marginalized by what in the mainstream would be considered extreme views on religious and cultural issues. So I think that helps him in Iowa right now, and it helps him elsewhere. It helps him with a base of support that propels him in the primary and sort of fuels this surge that he's on. If he gets to the point that he's the nominee, something I'm not quite ready to consider just yet, then he runs the risk of being marginalized by these issues. He was one of the three who did raise his hand about not accepting evolution. So that's a defining thing. As for the integrity, he is a man who seems to have legitimate compassion. He's a man who can be candid at times, but I have to say that he's had a history in Arkansas of being challenged on ethics matters for accepting gifts, those kinds of things. Nothing that's really a strong smoking gun. Nothing that landed him in big trouble. But he's also got a history. I think he makes a wonderful first impression, and I think he's out there in the country right now making a great first impression. On second impression, you can find a huffy side, a petulant side, one that doesn't like to be challenged, and can get a little mean-spirited in his responses to thin-skinned responses to critics. But that's a second impression that maybe the country will get to see.
John, I was going to follow up on that. You have written that you called him superficially likable.
Right.
And the way the media sees John Mike Huckabee is that he's extremely likable. What's the part that we don't see?
Well, I like him, too. And I liked him more when I first got to know him than later. Here's an example. He was, when he left the governor's office, he had the hard drives on the governor's office computers crushed. When he was criticized for that, he said that the reporter for the statewide paper who did the articles was doing Jason Blair, Janet Cook type stuff. Now, that was raging hyperbole, overly sensitive combativeness that really didn't address the issue of why he went this extra step, not just to erase the hard drives on his governor's office, but to crush them. That's an example of, I could give you other examples of how when he faces criticism, he is extremely combative, thin-skinned, and can be over the top. By his own admission, he calls himself Metaphor Mike, and he always talks about things in metaphors that he says can be and often are, when he thinks about them later, hyperbole. And that's just kind of an irresponsible way at times to behave in the public arena. But I don't think it's been evident just yet. He's got nothing but wonderful press yet, and when everything's on a positive arc for him, and we will see if things get hot and heavy, how he handles it in the national arena.
Let's get Jared on the line. Jared's with us from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Hi there. I heard on the radio, I don't believe it was NPR, though, that Mr. Huckabee supports a national tobacco ban. I was wondering if that's true or if it's simply a national smoking ban.
Arkansas, he has... of course, he's an adamant non-smoker and preaches against the dire health effects of smoking, and he has fought for in Arkansas smoking bans in restaurants and in public places. But that's
okay. So we're not talking about a tobacco ban across the country now.
No, that's a little bit of an overstatement as to what.
Okay.
He's done.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye bye.
And why don't we thank you for your time, John Brummett?
Appreciate well, thank
it.
You,
John Brummett, a reporter with the Arkansas News, and he joined us by phone from his office in Little Rock, Arkansas. And we're going to get to some trivia answers. Let's go to this is Tammy. Tammy, with us from Springville in New York.
Hi. Is it Woodrow Wilson?
Woodrow Wilson was governor of New Jersey when he was elected, but it's somebody more recent than Woodrow Wilson.
Than Reagan?
Well, Ronald Reagan was a former governor when he was elected governor.
Love your show.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Marcus. Marcus with us from Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah, Jimmy Carter?
Jimmy Carter, like Ronald Reagan, was a former governor. Carter was governor from 70 to 74, and he was elected president in 76, so no, not Jimmy Carter.
Now, my guess was, of course, Tom Dewey.
Yeah, I think the Chicago Tribune elected him in a famous headline.
George is with us. George from Tallahassee.
Well, I would have to say it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
It was all three. You're correct. FDR, named after that highway in New York.
But that's who it was, 1932.
That's correct.
George, thanks very much. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're on the Political Junkie. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we wanted to talk a little bit with you, Ken, about the celebrity endorsements that have been coming out. Is it likely that Oprah Winfrey's not only endorsement but campaigning for Barack Obama is likely to have an effect in Iowa?
Well, I don't think so. I think, obviously, given the fact that that most women, according to the polls right now, support Hillary Clinton over Barack Obama, and I think a poll by the Joint Study of American Studies, Joint Center for American Studies, which is an African American think tank, also shows that blacks support Hillary Clinton over Obama. I think ultimately the endorsement could help Obama with blacks and women, but first he has to get past Iowa, and if he wins Iowa and then perhaps even wins New Hampshire, then I think something like an Oprah endorsement may resonate more. But I think in Iowa, I think it's really the door-to-door campaigning, the retail politics, as we call it. That'll make the difference there. I'm not sure if Oprah makes a big difference in Iowa. But again, if he wins there, then it could have a steamrolling effect.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Barbara Streisand has endorsed Hillary Clinton. You'd think Fred Thompson, actor Fred Thompson, would have some celebrity endorsements, too.
Not many people are talking about Fred Thompson and Barbara Streisand. Maybe perhaps if this were the 1980 presidential race, maybe it might make a difference. But I think it's kind of interesting that they pull her out now right after the Oprah endorsement. We still should talk about, if we have time, for the YouTube debate tonight.
We were just going to mention that.
Oh, phew. Okay, well, the Republicans are in St. Petersburg, Florida, all eight. It's going to be on CNN, and it's sponsored by CNN and YouTube. It's airing from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time tonight, and it's the first time in a month that the Republicans have debated. The stakes are pretty high, even though it could be very wacky. You know, last time you had that talking snowman, but I thought there were some questions that were asked in the about I lost my husband in Iraq, or I have a family member with Alzheimer's. There were a lot of personal touches that so-called professional moderators can't really come across as sincere as the real people. But again, you do have the wacky. You even have a question from Chris Dodd, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, we downloaded some of the questions that people have submitted. Who knows whether they're going to be the ones that are going to be used. But this one from Sean McGorum will give you an idea of, just what Ken was talking about.
My brother Rudy has been in Iraq for over a year now, and my cousin Josh has been there longer than that. Regretfully, they're not going to be able to come home for Thanksgiving or Christmas. With that being said, how do you plan on assuring that they'll get home safely?
And those kinds of questions are going to be put to the candidates. There are a lot of different kinds of questions, The debate was postponed for a while because I think it was Mitt Romney who objected to taking questions from a snowman, as happened in the Democratic debate.
A lot of the Republicans feel that a lot of these questions are going to come from the left, and they'll come from a left-wing type of audience. But the CNN folks said they're not going to do any kind of gotcha questions. But I think the tape we just heard about a family member in Iraq or somebody with a disease or something like that, I think is far more personal than an Anderson Cooper or a Wolf Blitzer, just mouthing off the questions. So there could be a lot of silliness, and there probably will be silliness, but at the same time, there could be a lot of poignant questions.
Silliness? Are you referring to Daniel Mirsky's question?
My question is, if there were an alien invasion, what would you do and how would you do it? I already asked Rudy Giuliani this question, but I want to know what every candidate would do about it.
I want to know what Rudy Giuliani answered.
Yeah, well, I think that kid is insulting Dennis Kucinich.
Let's talk also about another debate coming up next week, this Tuesday in Des Moines.
That's right. We have the NPR Democrat. We've tried to sponsor a Republican and Democratic debate. The Republicans not only canceled on us, they canceled on Fox News the same couple of days of scheduling conflicts. But we have the Democratic candidates in Iowa, Des Moines, Iowa, on Tuesday. And it'll be pretty exciting. I remember the last 4 years ago when Neil Conan of NPR, you've heard of him, sponsored the debate. And my favorite part of a radio debate is Dennis Kucinich held up a sign, which always works very effectively.
A pie chart, yeah.
Yes, in a radio debate. But no, it should be great.
And we'll do a special broadcast of this program from Des Moines on Monday. Next Wednesday, Ken Rudin will join us from Des Moines. You can read his Political Junkie column at npr.org and come back and visit with us next Wednesday. Ken, thanks very much.
See you, Neil.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about the hidden hostage story. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And take over this beautiful